Work takes up most of your time. That's why you should use Stamps.com to save time with your mailing and shipping, and have flexibility to focus on more important things. Stamps.com can handle all your mailing and shipping needs with rates up to 88% off USPS and UPS. Add flexibility to your day with Stamps.com. Go to stamps.com/program to sign up for a special offer. No contract, cancel anytime. That's stamps.com/program.
At Kroger Pharmacy, care is what's most convenient for you. Care is being here when you need us. We're open evenings and weekends. Care is helping you save more. Most insurance plans and discount cards are accepted at your local Kroger Pharmacy. Care is saving you time by managing your prescriptions online. You can request refills, check order status, and more. Care is convenience that works for everyone. Kroger Health, a world of care is in store. Services and availability vary by location. Age and other restrictions may apply. For coverage, consult your health insurance company. Visit the pharmacy or our site for details.
Hello, everybody. This is not another edition of WrestleNomics Radio. This is a reading of the first edition of the WrestleNomics Report, which this is something that a few of you have asked me to do, to maybe create audio of me reading my own words. So I don't know that I will do this every week, but let's experiment with it and see how it goes. If you really like this, give me feedback. If you hate it, don't give me any feedback. So here we go with first this issue, which was published on December 27th, 2024, this past Friday. Oh, by the way, we also have in this newsletter a state of the business. If you're a patron, you have access to this. I will not be going through the state of the business section because it's a lot of numbers and charts, but I will be reading the following section. SmackDown moves to 3 hours in January. Early all-in Texas estimate of tickets distributed. Netflix NFL games average about 24 million viewers with no major issues. AEW international rights. ITV renews in the UK. Sky in Italy expires. A new Canada deal. WWE moves to Netflix in India in April. WWE, Vince McMahon, and John Laurinaitis refile motions to compel arbitration in the Grant case as expected. And then finally, opinion. What Lee Fitting's hiring says about the new WWE and Nick Khan. So we begin with housekeeping. What is this? My plan is to finish this on Fridays. In addition to Patreon, I'm going to publish this on Substack. But Patreon will remain the best place to support WrestleNomics and get the best value for your subscription. I want to make this material available to users on Substack, though, who may be more familiar with that platform in hope of reaching a wider audience. I decided to start writing this newsletter weekly instead of the WrestleNomics Radio podcast. I know some listeners were disappointed as it was part of their weekly routine, which I apologize for disrupting. But everyone has a podcast these days. I had two. I very much enjoy doing the Pollock and Thurston podcast, and that program will continue. In the long run, the time I previously spent on WrestleNomics Radio, which took up most of my weekends, I believe will be used much better here for WrestleNomics as a business, and more importantly, for providing information that informs more people and more effectively. I believe strongly that the medium matters more than most people realize, and with the occasional visual aid, I believe this newsletter will have a greater impact than WrestleNomics Radio could, which means, unfortunately, you will have to get your unintentional ASMR somewhere else. Then again, some have asked me to record the writing here also as audio for those who'd rather listen, which I'm doing right now. I'll consider it, but won't make any guarantees for now. I would rather err on the side of underpromising and over-delivering. It's why I could never be a wrestling promoter. Along those lines, before I set higher expectations, this newsletter won't always be this long. It's quite long this week. There was some news backed up from taking time off for the holidays. This first issue is free for everyone, so any potential subscribers can check it out. Some segments of the material here each week might be released for free sometime later so that people can sample the newsletter and consider subscribing. I might also consider making one issue per month free, like how one episode of the podcast each month was free. But you can expect most of the content here will be behind a paywall. You'll also find a state of the business section at the end here that I plan to update weekly. Its format will probably change over time, and I'll add some data to it from YouTube and for live events in the near future. So will there be opinion pieces here? To some degree, yes. There's a long one toward the end of this issue, and it's toward the back deliberately because facts, I think, usually should come first. I don't expect to write many long opinion pieces. Occasionally, though, when certain facts and patterns emerge, I feel compelled to write something, especially if the matter seems clear, but few are saying it. I understand there's a cost to having opinions. I think certain opinions that have to do with responsibility, though, are worth the cost. Separately from opinion, there might also be some analysis here, too. Like opinion, I will try to clearly label analysis to distinguish it from news or facts, which, by the way, brings me to, what's the difference between opinion and analysis? To me, analysis is like an explanation of some facts that the audience broadly is probably not going to understand without some help. But I'm going to have to make some arbitrary decisions about how to explain it, how to frame the situation, and so forth. We're moved away from bare facts in the case of analysis. Reasonable people can disagree about what is fair or unfair analysis, but analysis is not quite the diagnosis that an opinion is. And finally, there will be facts, maybe mainly facts. TV ratings, multi-million dollar deals, trees falling in forests. Reasonable people actually can disagree about facts, I think, but not usually. If they're obscure, if they're hard to confirm, yes. For the most part, though, facts are not up for debate, even as algorithms encourage you to debate them. Which is why it's important to support reporters and outlets you appreciate with your direct subscriptions if you can. It very slightly neutralizes civil unrest. And what could be more important than that? So, sign up now. SmackDown moves to 3 hours in January. WWE quietly disclosed that SmackDown will become a three-hour program next week. At the start of 2025, SmackDown will expand to 3 hours, starting with the January 3rd episode from Phoenix, Arizona, a post on WWE.com about where to watch the company's major programs stated, analysis. The revelation raises questions about whether the added hour of SmackDown was a part of the new deal with USA Network parent NBC Universal, which went into effect this fall. The average annual value of the U.S. SmackDown deal is $287 million, as reported by both CNBC and the Wall Street Journal when the agreement was announced in September 2023. That was thought to be a 40% increase over the previous SmackDown deal with Fox, which was for an average annual value of $205 million from late 2019 to late 2024. Though the news that SmackDown is getting more than two weekly hours complicates the straightforward comparison in value. Fox didn't bid aggressively for SmackDown because, according to Fox CEO Lachlan Murdoch, Fox couldn't get a strong enough return on its investment in the form of advertising revenue or increases to broadcasters' carriage fees. It's notable that with the move to 3 hours in January, USA Network will continuously have had at least 3 hours of WWE programming on the channel, even as Raw moved from 3 hours to two in October. And since SmackDown moved from Fox to USA on September 13th, bumping hours of weekly WWE content on USA from three to four. With Raw leaving USA in January, going to Netflix, USA won't fall to 2 hours, but instead to three with the lengthening of SmackDown. Having at least 3 hours of WWE content on USA is probably helpful to USA's advertising efforts and possibly fortifying the channel's carriage value. Based on the viewership SmackDown is now delivering on USA, a three-hour program aligns better with the cost per view hour of Raw, though all of these cost per view hour calculations are complicated by the transition that we're in the middle of in distribution that all programs, AEW and WWE, are in the middle of. I believe the three-hour duration was likely part of the original deal, given WWE communicated the change quietly, probably partly because they know fans have long complained about the three-hour duration of Raw. But if this news represented an actual increase in payment or other value for the SmackDown deal, I'd expect some kind of news about a renegotiation of the deal, which hasn't materialized in the week since the news emerged. Early all-in Texas estimate of tickets distributed. WrestleTix made its first estimate on Sunday of tickets out for AEW's all-in Texas at 9,990 estimated distributed. I helped by providing a color-coded map of the data derived from Ticketmaster based on various conditions intended to assist in determining which seats to rule in and out of the estimate. The show just outside Dallas at Globe Life Field is 6.5 months away on July 12th at the home of the Texas Rangers. Analysis slash opinion, sort of the middle ground between the two. All in 2024 had a similar long lead time for ticket sales, with general on sale beginning on December 1st, 2023, which was 268 days in advance of the August 25, 2024 event date. General on sale for the 2025 event started on December 9th, which is 215 days in advance. So slightly shorter, but still well over 200 days in advance. The final estimate from WrestleTix for all in 2024 was 53,654 at Wembley Stadium, with the local government disclosing to WrestleNomics that 46,476 tickets were used. WrestleTix's earliest estimate for all in 2024, which was posted on November 28th, 2023, was 27,349, which was 51% of the final estimate. If we just apply the assumption to the 2025 event that tickets distributed are currently 51% of the final count, that would result in a final count for all in 2025 of about 19,500. Evaluating success here is a lightning rod that will no doubt become more vociferous as July 12th approaches. If AEW is able to distribute more than 19,000 tickets, provided the portion of the comps isn't much above typical, that would be a number that's slightly too big for an arena. In that case, AEW could take solace in the notion that they drew a crowd just big enough to justify a venue bigger than a typical NBA slash NHL sized arena. That said, the event is on a trajectory to deliver less than half of the 2024 attendance, and this is with the benefit of all in being in the U.S. in a more convenient traveling location for AEW's domestic fan base. If all in 2025 at the end does have about 19,500 tickets out, it would be another data point, adding to the existing preponderance of data points to show that AEW fan interest has diminished significantly. Netflix NFL games average about 24 million viewers and no major issues. Netflix aired two NFL games on Christmas Day live on Netflix with no major technical issues. I'm looking for a copy editor. The two NFL games, Chiefs versus Steelers and Ravens versus Texans, each averaged 24.1 million and 24.3 million viewers in the U.S., respectively, according to Nielsen Fast National cited in a Netflix press release on Thursday. This was the first time Nielsen measured a live broadcast on Netflix. The viewership numbers were measured with the average minute audience AMA method, which means that data is like the like with the typical viewership numbers we report from Nielsen. Last year on Christmas, there were three NFL games on traditional broadcast networks, which each delivered somewhat higher viewership than the Netflix games. Raiders versus Chiefs on CBS averaged 29.5 million. Giants versus Eagles on Fox averaged 29 million even. And Ravens versus 49ers on ABC averaged 27.6 million. Analysis. The data for the NFL games on Netflix is a more transparent look at the kind of audience Netflix can deliver. The data is third-party, as opposed to Netflix's first-party data, such as the viewership figures announced after the Mike Tyson versus Jake Paul fight. Keep in mind, Netflix is a global platform. The NFL measurements from Nielsen were U.S. only, measured with AMA, so are directly comparable to other NFL ratings and familiar television ratings in general, which are also U.S. only. Netflix announced the Tyson-Paul fight in November peaked at 65 million concurrent streams, whatever that means, and 38 million in the U.S. That broadcast was plagued with live complaints about streaming issues. WWE will have a significantly smaller audience, a significant but smaller audience. The lack of any major problems broadcasting NFL games is reassuring that WWE live streaming will more likely to go off without issues. There's no sign that Nielsen will measure any WWE broadcasts on Netflix at this point. Netflix confirmed that VideoAmp will provide third-party data for advertisers, but it's unclear if any of that information will be made public. It wouldn't be surprising if by Tuesday, Netflix and or WWE put out a press release celebrating the January 6th Monday Night Raw premiere with data that isn't comparable to Nielsen data we're familiar with, perhaps leading with a global peak audience number that's much higher than the roughly 1.5 million viewers that Raw averages in the U.S. live same day. If they make an announcement on Tuesday, they could perhaps lump in some delayed viewing as well. Nonetheless, I would lean toward fully expecting the Raw premiere on Netflix to deliver a genuinely larger live plus same day audience than the typical episode of Raw lately on USA Network, given Netflix's actually superior reach at this point compared to top cable, and given the strong marketing push and hype around the first episode. Not to mention, January 6th is free of any NFL competition, which Raw has been head-to-head with since September. What Raw averages in the U.S. on a regular basis compared to its USA Network ratings, I'm less sure of. And I'm also uncertain we'll get reliable data to actually get that insight. However, I think there's a possibility Raw's global viewership, including delayed viewing, will appear on Netflix's self-disclosed weekly top 10 most watched TV shows rankings. Netflix also posts weekly rankings for the US and many other countries, but without revealing viewing data that underlies those ratings. AEW international rights. ITV renews UK, Sky in Italy expires, new Canada deal. ITV announced in a press release on Tuesday that it's extended AEW's existing deal with the UK network. Dynamite on Fridays and Collision on Wednesdays will continue airing free-to-air on ITV4, as well as on ITV's streaming platform, ITVX. AEW programming has been on ITV since AEW's launch in 2019. AEW's Italian commentator, Salvatore Torrisi, said in an Instagram video that AEW would no longer air on Sky in Italy in the new year, which WrestleNomics confirmed is accurate with a source familiar with the Sky-AEW relationship. AEW Plus will continue to be offered by Triller in Italy, as is the case in many international markets. We're told AEW will also have some new international deals that will begin in 2025. On Friday's media call, Tony Khan said AEW had multiple offers for its media rights in Canada. Khan said AEW got a major rights fee increase from Bell Media, the parent company of TSN, which broadcasts Dynamite in the country. As part of the new deal, Bell announced earlier this month that Collision will air on the Canadian version of the USA Network beginning in January. Before then, Collision has only been available on the TSN app in the region.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
WWE moves to Netflix in India in April. WWE will move from Sony's 10 Sports Network to Netflix in India beginning in April, according to Business Standard. India likely surpassed the UK in recent years as WWE's second most valuable media rights market behind the US. India will join much of WWE's international rights, which moved to Netflix upon the premiere of Raw on the platform on January 6th. Business Standard put the value of the soon-ending Sony deal at $180 million to $210 million over 5 years, which comes out to an average annual value of around $40 million. Sony, which has distributed WWE since 2002 in India, was eager to renew, Business Standard reported. However, quote, digital performance of WWE content on Sony's platform reportedly fell short of expectations during the current rights cycle, the report stated. Netflix's reach in India is likely considerably lower than that of Sony's 10 Sports, which is a pay TV channel, Netflix reportedly has 12 million subscribers in the country with a population of 1.4 billion. That's a contrast to the reach Netflix offers in the U.S., where Netflix has now surpassed the coverage of top cable networks like USA. WWE, Vince McMahon, and John Laurinaitis refile motions to compel arbitration in the Grant case, as expected. In a minor update on the Janelle Grant lawsuit, with the stay lifted on December 11th, the defendants all refiled their motions to move the case out of public court and into private arbitration, as expected. When Judge Jeffrey A. Meyer ordered the federal case put on hold for 6 months in June, pending an investigation from the Southern District of New York, he also dismissed all existing motions without prejudice, allowing them to be refiled within 2 weeks of the stay being lifted. The defendants, Vince McMahon, John Laurinaitis, and WWE, naturally resubmitted their motions to send the case to arbitration, citing the arbitration clause in Grant's agreement with McMahon that promised to pay her $3 million over the course of 5 years in return for her silence about her relationship with McMahon and WWE. With no charges brought yet from SDNY against anyone involved in the case, the six-month stay expired. Those filings submitted by the defendants on Monday and Tuesday were largely similar to those submitted last spring. One notable exception is that McMahon's renewed motion hinted at a possible defamation lawsuit he may be considering against Grant. Quote, "While it will be impossible to fully remedy the wrong of publicizing Grant's salacious and false allegations," McMahon's attorney wrote, "defendant McMahon will pursue appropriate remedies at the proper juncture." McMahon's representatives did not return a request to confirm he is in fact considering a defamation suit. Legal arguments from both McMahon and WWE also anticipated that Grant's attorneys might look to the Ending Forced Arbitration of Sexual Assault and Sexual Harassment Act, the EFAA for short, to justify avoiding arbitration, which is a new addition to their motions submitted earlier this year. Attorneys for the defendants contend that the EFAA went into effect on March 2nd, 2022, and the law is not retroactive. The NDA signed by Grant and McMahon, who signed both for himself and for WWE, was executed on January 28th, 2022, before the EFAA's effective date, and therefore, the attorneys argue, the new law does not prevent the judge from ordering the case into arbitration. Grant's attorneys have already contended that other laws, including the Speak Out Act and the Victims of Trafficking and Violation Protection Act of the TVPA, cause her agreement with McMahon to be unenforceable. The defendants reasserted their arguments otherwise, saying that those acts pertain to non-disclosure clauses, but not to the arbitration clause that was also among the clauses Grant and McMahon agreed to. Opinion. What Lee Fitting's hiring says about the new WWE and Nick Khan. When ESPN fired Lee Fitting in August 2023, it was a surprise. Fitting, a senior vice president with 25 years of the network, was reportedly let go after numerous allegations of misconduct. According to The Athletic, which broke the news this month, his alleged behavior included objectifying comments about women, crude jokes, and inappropriate criticisms of physical appearances. Fitting's sudden exit came just weeks before the new season of College Game Day, the program he served as head of production. Fitting's spokesperson denied some of the allegations to The Athletic, but didn't address others. By January 2024, Fitting resurfaced as WWE's new head of production. It wasn't a surprising hire. Fitting played a key role on one of the most popular pregame shows on television. WWE president Nick Khan is deeply connected to the sports media world. When he was a CAA agent, his clients included many ESPN personalities and game day on-air talent like Kirk Herbstreit and Tom Rinaldi. But Fitting's hiring, now that we know why he left ESPN, raises questions about how serious Khan is about reforming WWE's culture and reputation following perhaps the biggest scandal in the company's history. Fitting's hiring would be questionable enough if this wasn't Khan's first hiring of an executive with a history of alleged sexual misconduct, and if Khan hadn't so readily expressed loyalty to Vince McMahon after he returned from disgrace in 2023. In 2017, Jamie Horowitz was fired from Fox Sports amid allegations of sexual harassment. Horowitz's attorney at the time lamented he'd been treated unfairly. Fox described his termination as fully warranted. But by June 2021, Khan brought Horowitz into WWE as Executive Vice President of Digital and Development. Horowitz stayed until late 2023, leaving after WWE's merger with UFC. In 2022, the company's board of directors, of which Khan was a member, investigated McMahon after it was discovered he paid millions to women who worked for WWE, who he allegedly harassed or assaulted. Those women included Janelle Grant, a former paralegal who later further alleged McMahon trafficked her. As most reading this know, McMahon resigned in July 2022, but returned 5 months later, using his superior voting shares, putting himself back on the board. By the time of Vince's return, Khan, as a board member, would have understood the allegations against McMahon better than nearly anyone. Four women with non-disclosure agreements, including a former talent who accused McMahon of coercing her into oral sex, an additional two alleged misconduct incidents in spas, and former WWF referee Rita Chatterton's allegation of rape. That's seven different women alleging misconduct against McMahon, most of whom worked for him. But for Khan, McMahon's return seemed inevitable. He told Bill Simmons, days after Vince's comeback, that during McMahon's hiatus, Khan maintained contact.
And by the way, I made it a point, as did others, to see him once a month or so while he was sitting out.
Khan said on Simmons' podcast, framing McMahon as a sympathetic figure.
I think those things are important. And it's no different, in my opinion, than when other mutual friends of ours who have gone through hard times professionally, that's when they sort of need to hear from folks most that, hey, you haven't forgotten about them and you're appreciative of them and all of those things.
When Vince's comeback in January 2023 prompted the resignation of multiple board members, including his own daughter, Stephanie, Khan stayed on. He and current Chief Content Officer Paul Levesque, McMahon's son-in-law, were still part of the board when the members unanimously voted to restore McMahon as executive chairman.
And he came back and took control back of his company as a control shareholder. So it is the public's company, as a publicly traded company, but with that controlling share, gave him a lot of authority, and he used it, and I applaud him for doing so.
Independent directors Ignacy Laud and Manjit Singh quit the board rather than cooperate with Vince's return. It wasn't aligned with my way of seeing what governance is, Laud told the LA Times in September 2023. There was a misalignment with what my values are. WWE's decision to hire Fitting to such a prominent position less than a year later raises obvious questions about the company's priorities. If reporter Andrew Marchand indicated something was afoul immediately after Fitting's firing in August 2023, if The Athletic could source more than 20 women to learn more about his exit, it's hard to imagine Khan, one of the most well-connected figures in sports media, didn't know why he was fired or couldn't easily find out. WWE was indeed aware of why Fitting left ESPN, according to PW Insider. What conclusion is there to make other than being fired from your previous job for creating a toxic work environment for women at least isn't a deal breaker when being considered for one of the top executive roles in WWE, even in early 2024, with headlines of McMahon's alleged abuse in the recent past and worse headlines in the near future. Just 3 weeks after Fitting's hiring, Grant filed her lawsuit against McMahon in WWE. Her complaint alleged in graphic detail not only sex trafficking and multiple sexual assaults, but also that WWE's culture and leadership enabled it. The suit identified WWE corporate officer number one, who Grant's attorney later confirmed is a pseudonym for Nick Khan, as an executive who she says was supportive of the CEO's relationship with the paralegal under his employ. While Grant did not accuse Khan of any direct abuse, she claimed he was aware of McMahon's relationship with her. WWE takes Ms. Grant's allegations very seriously and has no tolerance for any physical abuse or unwanted physical contact, a WWE spokesperson said in one of the company's only acknowledgments of the lawsuit in March. WWE also added that Khan didn't know of any allegations of abuse before Grant's lawsuit was made public. With few exceptions, WWE has repeatedly avoided commenting on these allegations or broader issues about its culture. Silence might be a part of their strategy to avoid further legal complications or to minimize negative press. Or it might reflect leadership's lack of understanding and empathy for misconduct in the workplace and how to handle it, even with words. Look no further than Levesque's bewilderment at how to respond when faced with press questions about the Grant case a few days after it was filed. Nor have executives addressed the Ring Boy lawsuit filed in October, which alleges a history of sexual abuse allegations within WWE of children in that case throughout the 1980s. A few months ago, Grant's representatives called on WWE to release any women from NDAs who may have experienced misconduct at the company, similar to how NDAs were eventually waived by Harvey Weinstein's company. WWE hasn't acknowledged that demand at all. The history of wrestling, in many ways, is a history of people in charge trying to ignore what everyone else is thinking. The new era of WWE is so far no different. WrestleMania 41 last April was presented as a symbolic turning point. Khan and head of communications Chris LaGentle made subtle on-screen appearances. Levesque especially, and Bruce Pritchard, were celebrated before the audience. During the post-show press conference, Levesque praised Fitting 2 by name for his contributions. The message was clear to anyone looking past the matches and the spectacle of WrestleMania. Vince is gone. This is the new era. But is it? Under Khan's leadership, WWE has become more profitable than ever. Yet, despite the deals, the profits, and symbolic gestures, there's little to publicly suggest the company is all that serious about changing its culture. Khan's polished and affable image as a dealmaker, beloved by the sports media he enriched, distracts from his role in upholding pro wrestling's time-honored tradition of not letting sexual abuse allegations get in the way of business. It's hard to find anything Khan has said or done in public that offsets his actions regarding Fitting and Horowitz, and both his actions and statements regarding McMahon. Khan has rarely addressed McMahon scandals publicly, and when he has, it's among other topics with media friendlies like Bill Simmons and Matt Bellany, who know enough about WWE to be fascinated by its exciting business and to giggle at its zany form of entertainment, but not enough to question whether there are any ethics at the heart of Khan's leadership. On the other hand, maybe the WWE president, in another of his savvy calculations, observed that genuinely raising the company standards isn't worth the effort, and that hiring someone like Fitting to one of the top jobs in WWE was too good to pass up, even as he reportedly knew why he left ESPN. After all, this is pro wrestling where, still more than the rest of the world, abuse often doesn't have real consequences for those who cause or enable it, especially if they're powerful. Fans are largely indifferent. Media is mostly oblivious. And business partners care only as much as headlines force them to. So hiring Fitting is not of step with WWE's long-standing openness to leaders who may cultivate a hostile workplace for women or others. You might think that the new Vince McMahon-free WWE would work hard to distance itself from being seen as a refuge for those accused of harassment and abuse. But maybe Nick Khan knows that not enough people really care about that. Maybe he doesn't either.
Sometimes I think it's just a 3-mile radius of LA thing. The, hey, step down and, you know, you have to sort of be punished for it. It didn't used to be that way. Maybe certain things that happened in the past shouldn't have happened, or in a modern day point of reference culture, which I always try to look at these things from, Bill, that, hey, certain things that were acceptable years ago aren't acceptable now. I think over time you can evolve with these things, and the modern day rules should apply to modern day. I don't think it should apply to the past.
At Kroger Pharmacy, care is what's most convenient for you. Care is being here when you need us. We're open evenings and weekends. Care is helping you save more. Most insurance plans and discount cards are accepted at your local Kroger Pharmacy. Care is saving you time by managing your prescriptions online. You can request refills, check order status, and more. Care is convenience that works for everyone. Kroger Health, a world of care is in store. Services and availability vary by location. Age and other restrictions may apply. For coverage, consult your health insurance company. Visit the pharmacy or our site for details.
Americans love using their credit cards, the most secure and hassle-free way to pay. But DC politicians want to change that with the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill. This bill lets corporate megastores pick how your credit card is processed, allowing them to use untested payment networks that jeopardize your data security and rewards. Corporate megastores will make more money, and you pay the price. Tell Congress to guard your card, because Americans lose when politicians choose. Learn more at guardyourcard.com.